Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Welcome to our special Joe Strummer Day edition. Today we're going to be highlighting some of the issues surrounding poverty and disability. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Mike Bradley, Mayor of Sarnia, will be highlighting some of the successes and the challenges concerning accessibility this past year. So tell me a little bit about some of the accessibility successes in Sarnia of this past year.
Well, I think it's not as good as I would hope it would be. I think some of the things that have happened externally, the increase in the minimum wage has seemed to have had an impact on employers and disability hiring. I think in the long term that'll work itself out, but that certainly has made it more difficult for community groups and nonprofits to try to place people, and that's province-wide. And again, I think that'll work its way through the system. I certainly support an increase in the minimum wage so people are getting a fair wage for their employment.
So how is it that things like lack of income, lack of accessible facilities can impact the overall quality of life? Person with a disability can't get to work, can't have meaningful work?
Well, I mean, as you know, some of the key issues are the level of income, transportation, housing. There's so many issues that are intertwined, and that's why I think we need to have a more aggressive approach right across the province, across the country, on dealing with those key issues, because those issues certainly impact on everyone's quality of life. And for people with disabilities or challenges, it really puts them in a really difficult position to climb that mountain. And that's what I think people like myself are for, is to be the advocate, to continue to do it, but on a much broader scale and in a much more aggressive scale. Because I think too often people have stood back and accepted the charity of what governments are offering, but not looking at the substance of what they're offering as it relates to legislation and providing services. And that they need to be challenged more, because they tend to just react to crises or pressure points. And I would say that the disability community, the advocate community, hasn't been as strong as it needs to be to get that message across.
So are there any positive steps being taken from the advocacy groups? Any progress?
Well, I think that's, you know, it's not a criticism. I think that happens on a daily basis. I just think we need to be more militant. I think we need to show that this is a political issue. We have a federal election coming up in 2019, provincial election in about 3 years, and I think we need to be much stronger in that arena and not just getting the lip service we have in the past where, you know, we don't even get a full minister responsible for the disability issues in government.
So what steps would you take to work with employers and those who are offering services just to improve the quality of what's available?
Well, the approach I've taken through the Mayor's Challenge that initiated Sarnia, really with the idea of community living, is to get across the business case for hiring. This is not charity. It's not feel good, although there are aspects that does come to employers. It is, the reality is that your business can do better. And it's well known that the different things that happen, less absenteeism, more dedication in the workplace, That's the business case, and that's what has to be made, because when you're trying to get press business to spend money to hire, they need to see there's going to be a return on their investment.
So what's been the greatest success with the Mayor's Challenge?
Well, I think one is awareness, but I think the bigger, one of the things I always believe in on anything that we do is measurability. And Sarnia, for example, when we had a luncheon with Joe Dale and Mark Wafer from Rotary at Work, along with then Lieutenant Governor David Onley, we had probably 200 employers there. And the key was to follow up to ensure that we did get some results from it. And we did, from people that listened to the message, the business case that was made. And then we went back to them to see if they had hired, and in many cases they had. That's how you get results. It just can't be a feel-good lunch where you give speeches and you walk away from it. It is advocacy and then follow-up to ensure that something good did come out of those type of events.
So what are the next immediate steps in your work going forward?
Well, what I'm looking at right now is, in fact, I believe I have a speaking engagement now in Niagara. We've got a whole new group of mayors right across the province after the municipal election in October, and just looking at a different approach again, because I've changed the approach. Back in 2010, the original approach was to do the right thing. And about 5 years later, we rejigged that to say to do the smart thing. That was moving forward into the business case. This is for your own benefit in a municipality or in a business. And so I'm just reviewing that with people who know much more than I do about how we should approach that. And I'm looking forward with a lot of new mayors across the province to explain what the Mayor's Challenge was about. If local government, the local mayor isn't leading the advocacy, then it's very easy for business to turn away and say, well, why should we do that? It's easy to preach, but you got to lead by example. So I'm hoping in 2019 to really rev up the Mayor's Challenge again and probably take a different approach and a different motto to take it forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course. In the next segment of our show, we'll hear from Sukaina Dutta from York University, be telling us a little bit about how these issues can impact immigrant families. So in previous interviews, you've talked about some of the barriers facing immigrant families with members who have disabilities. How can this affect things like income and access to proper health care and things that might lead to issues of poverty?
Well, I mean, the families that we support at Smile Canada Support Services, many of them, they're new immigrants or refugees, and they've reported having difficulty with access to any types of social services, accessing, even getting quality access to health care. An example of that is families might go into a walk-in clinic and just not be provided with adequate information of where to go. And so many of these families require therapeutic services, or if they don't require it, they at least require the knowledge about these services. It's an individual's choice to take a service or not, but the problem is many people are not even being told what is out there. And so as a result, many families are not accessing services, and they're really trying to do things out of pocket. Well, Kim, you and I both know that it's extremely expensive.
And impossible.
It's quite impossible. And so we're seeing that there are many barriers to access. And, many of these are discriminatory. Families are reporting, having to deal with racism and ableism at the same time. And this makes it nearly impossible for them to be able to navigate the healthcare system and get access to appropriate services that maybe other individuals are getting access to.
So I'd imagine that because a lot of these families are refugees and immigrants who are essentially coming with nothing, they'd have a harder time finding something like meaningful employment, because they wouldn't be able to necessarily verify that, yes, I have this education or I worked here.
Yes, I mean, these issues of inclusion and accessibility span across the lifespan. So, first of all, we're seeing this in our education system. Families not understanding sort of what the system, provides. So not having knowledge on what does an individualized education plan, an IEP, entail, not understanding what are the services or what are the supports, if any. And then we see that in the transition to adulthood and transition to employment. You know, we see these, programs out there for, resume writing workshops and programs like, these different workshops that really are setting up youth, in a way that's rather false. It doesn't lead to meaningful employment. And then when accessing employment, it's the same issues that we're seeing, issues of discrimination, attitudinal barriers, environmental barriers. And so there has to really be a change at all levels because, for many immigrants, even those without disabilities, they're coming to this country and, they have a lot of skills, but they end up getting jobs that pay the lowest wages and, jobs that are not using their skills. And it's because we're not looking at a person's skills when we're looking at employment. We're just looking at the person and automatically we're putting them into this tiny box that says that they can't do anything, something that the disability community has seen for years and years. And unfortunately, it's changing, but not drastically, not in a way that it should.
So what steps do you think we as a society can take to overcome these barriers?
I mean, I think the very first thing, and Kim, you and I both know Professor Marcia Ryu, and she talks about this a lot in her work, is that we have to look at disability rights as human rights. That a person with a disability is a human being, and when we don't look at disability rights as human rights, then we're saying, okay, for people who are, quote, able-bodied, they can contribute to society. And for the others, well, they're going to get these random jobs. That's not the case. And we know that that's not the case. And so we have to, preach about it and practice what we're preaching because we have to, we have to take a skills approach. We have to say, if there is a certain job, who is fit for that job? A person with those skills. But what happens is we automatically are judging people and assuming that they don't have skills and they don't have abilities. And I think, it's not an easy answer, but I think at every level we have to address this. From when kids are just born and when they're entering preschool and at school and in employment, like we have to take a step back and say we all have rights and our rights have to be equal.
So this is a mentality that says we're all human beings. It's not saying, oh, can't let you in because you have this or can't let you in because you have that. It's what I call the impossible standard.
Yes, and then what happens is, people are facing, like I mentioned, before, but people are facing discrimination on many levels. They're facing sexism, they're facing homophobia and transphobia and ableism and racism. And, putting all these together, we're making it impossible for people to be included. And, we have to really just, if we're going to talk about inclusion and accessibility, we have to be honest about what we mean as a society by that. Do we mean inclusion in only some areas? Or do we mean inclusion in everything, in every aspect of life, in every type of position or job? Because unfortunately, it seems like we've made progress, but only for, lower paying jobs, and we've set standards very low. And, as a society, we have to examine this because it's discriminatory.
So basically we're creating our own problem in a sense. Generational poverty and discrimination can be a very learned attitude. So if someone doesn't know there are better possibilities, it becomes that much more difficult to break out of the cycle.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think if we, I mean, I think it's doable, you know, I really do. I think it's doable. I think we've made progress, but I think, you know, where we're at today, like, Canada just signed on to the optional protocol. I mean, we are making progress, but I think we have to, I think we have to dig deeper and say what, even all the progress that we've made, we still have a long way to go to ensure inclusion for everyone and human rights for everyone.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you so much, Cam.
Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Youth Center is a free drop-in community center for homeless and at-risk youth in the Windsor-Essex area. The WYC assists people with many important things, such as replacing identification, housing applications, apartment searches, and resume writing, as well as providing meals, snacks, and a safe space for youth to come together. The Windsor Youth Center is located at 1247 Wyandotte Street East and is open Monday to Saturday from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. For more information, visit their website at thewindsoryouthcenter.org or give them a call at 226-674-0006.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor-Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In our earlier segments of the show, we did some talking about poverty and disability issues. We heard from Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley and Sukaina Dada. In this segment of our show, we'll find out how these issues impact Aboriginal peoples with disabilities. And to talk about that, I'll be chatting with Neil Boulanger from BCANS. So tell me a little bit about some of the issues of poverty and disability that affect the Aboriginal population.
Well, we know, Cam, that I think it was 2016 that the Statistics Canada put out a report saying that about 80% of First Nations communities in Canada have a medium income below the poverty line. We also know there's other environmental factors and other factors such as transportation, isolation, that contributes to an individual's ability to work, ability to access services, which then come around to the issue of poverty. So, I mean, poverty is not a new issue with our sector. I think that Indigenous persons living with disability experience a higher rate of poverty and, sorry, I just got a call in here, poverty and some of the negative factors that go with that.
So how do these factors impact a person's overall quality of life? Things like getting medical care or proper income, housing?
So housing is a big crisis across the country here, both within Indigenous communities and non. So finding a place that's affordable when you're living with a disability, when you're living in poverty, different rates across the country are you know, they vary, but I think everybody would agree that they're very low. Here in British Columbia, I think we're at $1,135. Other jurisdictions are lower. The average cost for a rental unit outside of an Indigenous community is probably around, you know, $800 to $1,100. Then you have utilities, you have everything else on that, transportation costs. So it doesn't leave a lot of room for you to, you know, go out, be active in your communities, seek employment, seek education and training opportunities. It just doesn't work. And that's not only experienced by the Indigenous population living with a disability, it's experienced by most people living with a disability. And it's a vicious cycle. So we know that if you live with a disability, you're more likely to live in poverty. And if you live in poverty, you're more likely to have a disability. So it's a continuing trend that we see, and you know, we have to take action as a country to address this.
So in terms of those living in poverty with a disability, they might have a harder time affording things like medical appliances they may need.
Well, disability, living with a disability is not cheap. I mean, there's higher needs, there's higher health costs, and they get progressively higher as an individual ages. So, I mean, there's adaptive technologies, there's people that might require a wheelchair, a special wheelchair, a tailor-made, custom-made wheelchair, all those things, communication devices, everything. And they're not cheap. And there's limited resources and programs that can assist with those. So, I mean, when you're living with a disability, you have all the points against you. You know, you often don't have the same educational opportunities. You certainly don't have the same employment opportunities. Employers are often fearful. They're not sure, you know, what they have to do in their workplace to change it, or if they have to fire somebody, it will be a human rights complaint. So these are all things that we deal with, and, you know, ultimately they negatively impact the person living with a disability.
So you said this is something the country needs to address. What steps would you suggest could be taken?
Well, I think across Canada there's a number of steps that we could look at. And I think that, a living wage is one thing. Make sure that everybody, you know, the living wage is going to vary across Canada, but that the provincial and territorial governments are implementing those things. Make sure that people who are accessing income or persons with disability assistance, that there is higher earning exemptions for them so that they can work without fear of losing their assistance or their medical benefits. CPPD, here in British Columbia, if a person is on CPPD, they get topped up from whatever that level is, and I think I'm not sure what it is right now, but, you know, we have to take a look at that, and CPPD only has an earning exemption, I think, of $5,000 a year. Our provincial earning exemption is $12,000 here in BC. We start looking at, you know, standardizing that at a higher rate across Canada, so people can work if they're able to a higher level. Looking at the universities, allowing opportunities for persons living with a disability to attend university, lower the tuition rates, make sure there's more spots for lower income persons, making sure there's a stock of housing available and that there's rent control processes in place. So there's quite a few things that could happen. It takes some time, unfortunately, and it takes a commitment from government to do it.
So if you could send any one message about why this is essential to get done, what would you say?
Well, I'd say just like anybody else, you know, the persons who live with a disability are people. They're part of our communities. They contribute to our communities. They're vital to our communities. And as anyone else, they deserve the same opportunities and the supports. We all need supports. Those supports are different. They're varied for each of us. But when you're living with a disability, it seems that the opportunities that you're presented are limited. And we've got to change that. We've got to educate. We've got to work with employers. We've got to work with municipalities and provincial and territorial governments and make sure that they are taking a disability lens to everything that they do and a poverty lens and say, look, this is how we're going to conduct business forward, because we cannot marginalize persons living with a disability any longer.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Great, thanks, Ken.
Of course. These issues, my friends, no matter where you're coming from, what's your background, what type of disability it is, the issues of poverty, and ultimately one's place in society, should never be something that holds you down. Truth is, we all struggle with those questions at one time or another. What will the future be like? Will I have the right level of income, the right level of access? I mean, it's awfully short-sighted to think just because the world is all milk and honey today that tomorrow is going to be so easy. And the truth is, there's no point in having all the wealth and all the resources in the world if you can't share them with others. Fact is, people with disabilities do have a lot to contribute to this world. It's just a question of getting to the right place, the right time, matching them with the right opportunity. Giving them work just as a matter of tokenism is not enough. It is not okay to say, yeah, we did this, ain't we great? Yeah. A very wise man has a saying about that. Don't break your arm patting yourself on the back. And that saying is absolutely correct when it comes to the matters of giving something meaningful versus doing something just to get them out of the way, something we are more comfortable with. Because to us, it may seem a matter of just providing a token opportunity, but ultimately, there is this glass ceiling effect. If we're creating generational poverty and lack of access, the problems will only get worse as time goes on. But if you're someone who's genuinely committed to these ideals, willing to look at the person in totality, regardless of cultural background, orientation, what type of disability it may be, just to see that this is a human being. To us, it may be a public image thing, showing the world that we're committed to diversity. But to them, it's their day-to-day life. It's their livelihood. It's the job they go to and do their very best at. And if we're saying, we'll give you this, but only up to a point, we're defeating the whole purpose. The question with any human life is, was, and ever shall be, what can this person do? How far can they really go? And unfortunately, far too few of us have the freedom to explore those questions for ourselves. I mean, it can't be that you're someone who can change the world if you have all the money and influence out there. If you're someone with real drive and real potential, we as a society need to look at that. Consider your worth is not simply measurable by what workplace accommodations we may have to give you. Your worth is measured based on the fact that you are a human being, a living, breathing member of the community. No matter what you may believe, where you may come from, what makes you unique, you are still a human being entitled to life, respect, and opportunity. And we as a people can't create our own roadblocks and then whine because they're in place. It's very true. But I am pleased to say that steps are and hopefully will continue to be taken toward the betterment of all this. Will you make everyone happy? No, of course not. That's not how it works. But if you can do something, something meaningful, it's at least a start. Taking it from a place of hopelessness, place of, we'll do our best, we'll give you something to go on, and you yourself can build with it. Yeah. It's not a question of entitlement. It's not a question of people with disabilities having everything done and given for them. It's a question of giving them tools and opportunities. See what they build with it. That is merely a question of the individual. What they want out of life, what they can create. Like anyone else, they need people to fall back on, people to trust. But giving them the tools, the opportunities, they might just surprise you. Make this world of ours just a little more of a beautiful place. Diversity is one thing on paper, but it doesn't stop on paper. It doesn't stop with saying, we support this. It doesn't stop at all. Our ideals must match our actions. Progress, my friends, will only be made if we're actually courageous enough to allow it to be made. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.